All right. Hey, and welcome back to your favorite work-related podcast, We Can't Make This Up. I'm your host, Dominique Lyric, and thank you again for joining me for another week to talk about corporate America and all the things that don't get talked about. So today's topic is all about passive-aggressive behavior in the workplace. You know, passive-aggressive behavior is that pink elephant in the room that many of us may push to the side and maneuver around to simply avoid the conflict in hand. Whether it's the subtle insults in the break room or a colleague who's been avoiding speaking to you in the hallway for the sixth time and they usually greet you with excitement, you, my friend, are dealing with passive-aggressive Patty or Patrick. Because passive-aggressive behavior is so indirect, it can be hard to spot head on, and even when you're feeling the psychological consequences of it. In today's episode, we're going to talk all about it and how to strategically navigate this behavior, whether you are the giver or receiver of it. My special guest today is, simply put, thebomb.com. We go way back, and he has literally used his voice today to empower and inspire others. Dubbed a modern-day Renaissance man, Doma T. Pongo is a Chicago-born journalist committed to elevating the narratives of marginalized people. He's an award-winning broadcaster and host of MTV News Need to Know, and also works as a speaker and multimedia consultant through his firm, Pongo Strategy Group. He is fancy now, but we go way back, so you're going to hear me call him Medi all throughout the show. But I want you to help me to formally introduce and welcome our special guest, Doma T. Pongo.
Hey, man. Thank you for having me.
Hey. Welcome, and thanks for being on the show. You're a busy man. Everybody wants to talk to you, so thanks for stopping by.
Man, thanks for having me. It's an important topic. I wish I had resources like this when I was really going through exactly what we're about to talk about. So, I'm happy to have the conversation.
Awesome. So tell people a little bit about yourself. I gave you a brief intro, but tell the people who you are.
Yeah, media guy. I have been working in journalism for going on 7 years. Right now I'm at MTV News. We've got a show called Need to Know that broadcasts news reports twice daily and a talk show once a week every Thursday. So definitely follow MTV News and follow my personal Twitter account at Doma T_ and check out the show. And then I've got some projects I can't talk about yet, but just be on the lookout for some really interesting investigative journalism pieces coming out of my department pretty soon.
That's exciting. So let's jump right into today's topic about navigating, you know, what I'm calling corporate America's biggest communicative challenge, and that's passive aggressive behavior. And I think many people don't even know what they're experiencing to even begin to fix it. So I want to start off by us talking about what is the definition of passive aggressive behavior?
That's when someone tells you, when somebody's throwing shade but trying to make it seem like they're not doing that. It's when you send your work over to your peer or your superior and they question it, not on the merits of the work itself, but because a person of color sent it, they're not sure if they trust what it is that you put together. Or it's when you're in a meeting and you put an idea forth, and rather than just saying, hey, this might not work because of XYZ, they find all this other language to tiptoe and dance around the thing that's meant to undercut you. And it's very hard to sometimes identify, but they gaslight you when you do identify and say, no, I meant nothing by it. That is like passive aggressive in the most colloquial way I can explain it. I don't know. How would you explain it, though, sis?
I think you killed it. Like, I think that's exactly what it is. I think one of the biggest pieces of it is it's an avoidance of direct confrontation. So as we continue to talk about it today, I want that to be top of mind for people to understand that when the person is being passive aggressive, they are trying to avoid direct confrontation. So the way in which we kind of propose the challenges or the solutions today, we have to be mindful that when you are trying to find a solution for something that's the avoidance of direct confrontation with confrontation, it's going to be kind of challenging. So with that being said, you know, it makes it even more problematic, right?
Yeah. And I think what makes it so challenging is especially more challenging culturally as when it comes to black people, we tend to be more straightforward and direct in our communication. Mm-hmm. So oftentimes it's hard to be able to parse what someone is trying to tell you if they're not just explicitly saying what they mean. And because of the way office politics work, you may hear from secondary sources how people really feel about you. And it can be distracting to your work performance. And so, you know, it's very difficult to identify sometimes, and it's hard to navigate it because, like you said, it's someone who's trying to avoid confrontation. So how do you confront someone who doesn't want to avoid confrontation without seeming aggressive yourself, especially when you are a black man or woman?
Exactly. Let's tap into that a little bit more. What's been your experience, you know, as a black man, when having to deal with someone who's passive aggressive, and just like kind of how do you navigate that?
Well, I have to go back a little bit to when I was working in like traditional corporate America. I worked in Minnesota for about a year as a business analyst. And that role was interesting because when you're in corporate America, oftentimes, I mean, we saw with this college scandal, these conversations start to bubble up again around affirmative action and diversity. Sometimes when you're a person of color and you're in these workspaces, people assume that you're a diversity hire, or when you've come out of a certain type of university, that affirmative action got you there, or when they read your resume, or when they hear people speak highly of you, it's almost like they take those things with a grain of salt. So in my situation, that's kind of what happened to me. I had one coworker who, no matter what work I submitted, how I put it together, just didn't believe or trust my numbers and would challenge me in meetings and challenge me to superiors. And I remember I had to be the one, and this is one of the methods I used to get around this. I put together a group email. First, I hit up my manager on the side and said, I'm having trouble getting along with this person on my team. I think they're a great worker. I think I said everything possible I could say good about the person. I said, but our communication styles differ, and I don't think we can communicate without a mediator as far as the specific problem goes. So how about I send a separate email with all three of us on it, and let's meet, and let's see if we can talk this through. She said, cool. And so I sent the email and made it seem like it was the first time I, you know, had spoken about this. And so I sent an email. It's me, the person I'm having a conflict with, another person on my team, and my manager. And I came with my receipts. I came with my work. I came with the passive-aggressive emails, where, you know, without explicitly saying, I think these numbers are wrong, the person says, well, I'll recheck this again. Are you sure? Do you feel confident about this? There's things that constantly undermine my intelligence. And once the work was ironclad and we had this meeting, I stopped and said, I just can't seem to figure out why he doesn't like me. And, you know, and the whole where everything was just out there. So it's like, so left it up to everybody there to sit down and really think about. No one said it, but they realized it was unconscious bias behind it. So I know that was a bit long-winded, but that was what my personal, you know, story was in dealing with that. And it equipped me in dealing with it and approaching it when I moved to the news space, when I started working in mainstream media, where, especially in a climate like today, people are cognizant of not offending you, but they also, it also makes them scared and giving you feedback because they want to tiptoe around things, and it's just very difficult to navigate.
Absolutely. And what was the outcome of that? Like, did you feel a change kind of come about from that? Or was it like you put it out there and then the behavior just kind of ensued?
Good question. It ended up being a positive. So, you know, I said, what I ended up learning though, what I learned out of that, the thing that I was doing incorrectly was, for me, I know we've heard it coming up when you have to work twice as hard when mm-hmm. you're black. And I realized that when I put together the Excel spreadsheet, you know, without getting into the weeds about the particulars of the job, there's a lot of math behind it. I didn't leave the formulas up. I would send her PDF files of the printouts of the work. So now I was like, okay, well, let me leave the formula in the document. So basically letting people see what my process was and how I came to my conclusions. So at least if they're coming with a critique, you know, it's coming from a place that they know how you got there. And so it let me know that I can communicate more clearly, and I had to open the curtains a little bit more, a little bit wider, and show them how it was that I do my job. Now, did other people have to do that? I don't know. But it's the cross that we bear for how we look and how we navigate the workplace, and it made my job easier. And so when it came time for performance review, I cited that as a strength. I was like, I've now become a better communicator. I'm a great resolver of conflict. I'm able to work and be adaptable to change. And then she ended up writing me a recommendation for my next job. So it actually, those challenges actually give you an opportunity to show your skill set and show that you can be poised under pressure, which is what they look for in leadership.
Absolutely. Kudos to you for that. That's an amazing story, actually. It was a few things that you said in there when you said you kind of took a step back and took like a greater step of accountability to say, hey, maybe I'm not communicating as clearly as I could be. Let me provide this information. And I think that takes a lot of character to be able to do that and to kind of look at it on both sides to understand why someone would even be, quote unquote, challenging your work. And I also think it's really important to understand that when you're in these situations, you know, benefit of the doubt is powerful. That's like the key to navigating passive aggressive behavior. When you lead a conversation with accountability, with benefit of the doubt, it changes the conversation. And I would argue it changes it for a more success story. It goes to a success story versus this story of defeat, right? I think it's also really important to understand that with passive aggressive behavior, this isn't to let anybody off the hook, but I do want to say we need to have a level of empathy and grace for people who behave this way because we've all been there in some regard. You know, we've all kind of been indirect about what we're trying to communicate. So for her, what I'm kind of like assessing is she wanted to say what she should have said, but might not be so easy, is, hey, Domity, I would like to be able to see your work so I can understand your rationale and thinking behind these numbers, period. You would have said, all right, I'll just send you the sheet with the formulas in them. Case in point, it would have been done. I think people don't know how to communicate exactly what they need. They communicate how they feel.
That's a great, great learning right there. Like, sorry to cut
yeah,
in right
get
here,
in
but
there.
I just,
yeah.
Just want to add, that's a really great learning. Like, when someone is communicating how they feel, you have to look at yourself first. You can't control their unconscious bias. You can't control any of that. And you can't respond emotionally. Think about what you're doing to feed the beast. What are you doing to put fuel to the fire, right? Don't think about anybody else in your department that doesn't have to do what it is that you have to do. Just accept that you have to do whatever that is and know that you get to talk about it in your performance review. But I had to acknowledge that, okay, there is something that I'm not doing that is opening the door to this behavior. And just like you said, that accountability piece is so important. We take a step back and you say, what is this person trying to communicate with their frustration? And once you address that, you take the wind out of their sails.
Absolutely. And that's the hard part to grasp, because as humans, we want to talk about how we feel. I believe in feelings. People should acknowledge them. But sometimes, especially in the business world, you have to balance facts and feelings. The reality is, what are your like, can you explain what these numbers mean? So that we all good, right? It might not be anything to do with race. It might just literally be the way that person is thinking, like, okay, I want to be able to check it. So how do I check it?
Yeah.
So that thoroughness, you know, just understanding like there's multiple ways in which people think and adapting. I think the way you serve that up, you know, in your review was brilliant. Like, you know, I can adapt to change. You know, I can resolve conflicts. I just think that whole story is like, I hope people are taking notes.
Yeah, man. I mean, like, conflict at work, man, gives you the opportunity for success stories. If you've never had any conflict at work, not even conflict with a coworker, but challenges, or, you know, if you've never missed a quota, missing a quota and then coming back to the top is just like a movie. People love a success story. And your manager wants to be able to take credit. If you have a manager or some type of supervisor, they want to be able to take credit for those success stories. And so I feel like it's dope. Look at any setback as an opportunity to create that narrative. And it can serve you well. And when it comes to, you know, when people are like being passive aggressive, I think in the workplace, especially culturally as Black folks, we have to be able to read between the lines when we do get the same kinds of notes in meetings. Like when certain things are said, we take things at face value because I'm generalizing here, but I think that we speak at face value. We speak plainly. We loud. We verbose. We say what it is we mean. White folks tiptoe a little more. They're a little more polite. They might not give you directly what you need. And by the time they are at the point where they're being a bit more aggressive and a little bit less passive, it seems like those criticisms are coming out of nowhere because you never paid attention to all of the subtle hints that they were unhappy with the piece of your performance or something you were doing.
Absolutely. And I think this goes perfectly into kind of like the question around how does passive aggressive behavior manifest, right? So in order to kind of understand it, as I was thinking about, you know, our conversation, I was like, okay, what are some key traits that make the workplace or office culture the perfect place for this to manifest? And there's a lot of reasons. I did a bit of research this week about it. I kind of like fell into a rabbit hole. You know how you go on YouTube and you start reading and listening. You're like, damn, it's been 4 hours. so I was on, I was reading an article on Psychology Today, and they were talking about the different traits basically that make the workplace like the perfect place for passive aggressive behavior. And what I thought was like super fascinating was like they correlated the experience at work and your personal life together, in that people tend to act similar to how they would in systems of hierarchy, right? So if you go into that a bit deeper, the article said, I'm going to quote it, "The workplace hierarchy may resemble a dysfunctional home environment." And then it said that for a child whose primary caretaker was all powerful and gave the child no recourse for the direct expression of anger, a hierarchical workplace may trigger his or her template for perceiving authority figures as hostile. And regardless of the accuracy of the perception, the passive-aggressive employee will tend to respond as if any authority figure in the workplace is the abusive adult from their childhood. I'm going to let that sizzle for a second.
Wait, let me make sure I understand. So it's saying that employees react passive-aggressively toward their bosses because, for right or for wrong, they inevitably see them as authority figures and they want to rebel against them?
Yes, they are making that statement.
Okay.
Because the workplace and home, they both are like these hierarchies, right? You have a parent or someone, you know, you do certain things or you learn certain behaviors or you learn how to be passive aggressive to your parents. That's the first place, right? You're at home or a spouse, for example. You want to ask your husband or wife to do the dishes because they haven't done them in 2 weeks. So you say, "You just think I'm just a maid." That's a passive aggressive statement because you just want to say, "Can you do the dishes more?" So you learn how to tiptoe at home and with the people and, you know, on a day to day. And when you go to work, you work in the same structure, and similar to how you're at home, you don't want to get in trouble with your parents. You don't want to lose your spouse. You don't want to get fired in the workplace. So it's that same hierarchy, right? That's what I thought was really interesting. It's like, yeah, that's true. It's that same hierarchy of like, I need to tell you how I feel, but I don't want to get fired. So it's like psychologically, we kind of create this passive aggressive behavior as like a habit because that's kind of like the structure in which we've kind of been conditioned to.
That makes perfect sense. And I think when you, and I like, it seems we're switching the conversation too about ways that we can resist being passive aggressive, passively aggressive, I guess is the way to say it, is knowing that you show strength in being able to explicitly say what it is that you want and explicitly say how you feel. And I remember having, even in my current role, having a coworker, I see women do this a lot, apologize for how they feel in a situation or ask for permission in situations where they don't necessarily have to. Mm. So I had a writer before who would like, you know, say, "I'm sorry, could you send that again?" Or like, I'm like, "No, sorry, you ain't got to start a sentence when I'm sorry. Just say, send that again." I was like, if the brothers were talking to each other, the men were talking to one another, we would just say, "Send that to me again." You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so like, if there are different things that we do that create this atmosphere, and that's not necessarily passive aggression, but it makes you seem timid or weaker or subservient. And that
that changes the way people engage and interact with you overall. But it goes back to what you said, that authority figure, the way we're conditioned to look at certain people and certain genders as authority figures.
It's spot on. When I was reading it, I was like, that's so true. And it makes you have a different perspective on the topic, as not being so, it makes me feel like I have more grace now, having like done this research and thought about this topic a little bit more, because it's not one side. No side is necessarily in a better position than the other, being the receiver or the giver. I think there's a lot of learnings for people. That's why I knew that this episode was so important, because I think people need to understand it from both sides. And I think that's how you get to a compromise, right? That's how you build better communication skills and tactics, when you can understand where the other person is coming from.
Yeah.
Another thing from this article that I wanted to hit on real quick is they talked about like the heavy reliance on electronic communications and how it provides a perfect and ideal cover for passive aggressive exchanges among coworkers. So, you know, you see people all the time, they get into almost like email wars or beefs via email. And it's so much passive aggressive. Like, people are able to really be passive aggressive. I blame it on like technology and the world we live in. Like, people just don't talk to one another anymore. We don't walk up to people and talk to them. It's like, oh, I can send an email. I've had clients who sit next to each other, and I will be on the phone with one, and I'm like, hey, can you tell me your calendar availability for you and your team? They're like, I can only speak for myself. And it's like, y'all don't talk. You sit next to her.
Oh, snap.
Y'all don't talk.
Oh.
You know, and it's like, it's the perfect opportunity, or like when we talk about manifestation of passive aggressive behavior, it's the perfect place for it to dwell in. You don't have to look anyone in the eyes. You don't have to look for, you know, physical cues, communication cues or anything. It's the perfect place to kind of hide behind email or some type of electronic exchange. So I just thought that was kind of interesting. Like, yeah, I've definitely had those situations.
Yeah. You know, it's funny about email. My favorite, I'm going to sound like a hypocrite, though. My favorite passive aggressive clapback, though, I'm sorry, is per my last email. That is my favorite. I will say, I've been passive aggressive before. If I've sent you something before, you asking for it again, acting like you ain't seen it already because you missed the deadline, I'm going to hit you with it. Here you go, per my last email, thanks, !
That is a passive aggressive clapback. It really is.
It really is. I'm sorry. I'm still growing. I ain't perfect, Domo. I'm trying.
Listen.
That's the one that gets me, man. That's the one that gets me. But, like, and those are moments where, after you have, like, a few rough exchanges with somebody, or, you know, you're wondering what the energy is like, that's when you just got to hop over and go to somebody's cubicle or desk or office and say, yo, hey, I might have misread what you said a moment ago. You got time to do a lunch and talk it over for, like, 5 minutes? And then y'all go through what it is that y'all didn't understand about how y'all were coming off. And sometimes just doing that enough, usually people will take a step back, but just walking over and asking someone, hey, I'm sorry, did I offend you? Because blah, 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 or finding the right approach to approach that person, that alone lets them know you're not with the smoke. You're not the one to talk to a certain kind of way. Just be as polite as ever, smile as hard as you want to, and, you know, and we've talked about this offline before, about me being really conscious as a black man, not coming off as aggressive, and not when I walk up on somebody's desk, making sure it's not like I'm running up on them.
Exactly.
But I make sure that my smile is beaming. You know what I'm saying? I make sure that my body language and my shoulders are back, that when I talk, I'm talking with my palms open and facing them, because, you know, speech and body language experts say that shows that you're trustworthy and that you're not coming in a threatening manner. And all of those things, you can say exactly what you mean with a smile and with good energy, and let it know I'm not the one. Let them know I ain't the one.
You don't want that smoke. That's what it is.
You don't want this smoke. Not today. Not on a Tuesday, Karen.
Mm-hmm. Not Karen. Oh, man. I think
it's always Karen.
Oh, man. Oh, man. That just tickled me. I'm not even, I can't even say what I was thinking. Oh, man. So true. So true. I think, like, as we kind of transition into solutions, you know, you talked about, you know, the body language and the approach when you're approaching someone who you want to, you know, be direct and, you know, make sure you're smiling or give off different, you know, cues that you aren't aggressive. And that I think one of the other keys is making sure it doesn't feel like a confrontation, because that's the word there, right? So if you thinking about superheroes and you're bringing and you're antagonized the and you are antagonizing the Hulk, you know that his that's his breaking point. When you antagonize him, he gets angry. So that's how I kind of think about passive aggressive behavior. It's like it's the Hulk. No one wants to be confronted. So how do you confront without confronting? And I think one of the biggest ways you do that is you have to make sure that you are being clear, but you are almost seeming like you're giving the benefit of the doubt. So let me give you an example. Like I did this with a friend recently and she was like, oh, that's completely different. It's one thing to walk up, you know, smiling with your hands out and you still say, hey, you've been sending me emails. You know, I've been sending you emails for weeks. You don't pay attention to them. You send me an email every time, you know, weeks later asking me for documents. And then, you know, you call me out in meetings as if I haven't sent you the documents. You kind of smile, act like everything's okay. But then you copy my boss like that's not cool. And, you know, it's real passive aggressive. And I think that we need to come to a solution, right? That could be, that's actually not that bad. But let me show you how it could work on the other end. You can approach somebody and say, hey, can we talk real quick? So I've been noticing a few things. I just want to kind of get to the bottom of it. So the first time I noticed something that you did, you know, you sent the email, you copied my boss and put a joke in there. I didn't know if you were really being funny. So I didn't think much of it. But, you know, it's been repetitive for like 6 times. You know, you did it last week and then it was every day since then. I just want to kind of get to the bottom of, you know, is this being done on purpose at this point? You know, and kind of what are your thoughts on that? How do we kind of troubleshoot this to make sure that it's very clear in what you are trying to put out there? What that approach does, like the difference between the first and the second is benefit of the doubt is given in the second one. The first one is you are telling your truth, as Ayala Van Zant would say, beloved, that's your truth. The second one, it expresses your truth, but it doesn't say that that is the truth per se. It gives the person the opportunity to say
the second
how they
one,
felt.
Yes, seeks clarification and opens the window to my truth might be incorrect because of my vantage point.
Exactly. Exactly. And you said you hit the nail on the head, the vantage point. We so quick to speak our truth that we're not, it almost makes it, you remove yourself from the truth, right? You're so quick to try to defend or tell your story that you haven't even set it up in a way to receive the other side of it.
I would only add to that if you can see, if there's a way that you can see where you may have faltered, I would also offer up that perspective as well. You know, if you approach and you say, perhaps it's because I didn't, you know, communicate clearly the first time we did XYZ or whatever it is that you can take accountability for or take the onus on. When you open with that, it tends to disarm people because the first thing when you confront someone, they're going to be defensive. Mm-hmm. But if you open up an opportunity for them to talk about where you faltered, now the table is set for you to say, okay, cool, receive that now. And then you can get into what it is that you get into. But only if you believe that there was an area where you could have done something a little better. I think it does help the conversation. It's very hard to do. It takes a lot of humility but I think it is effective if you can find those moments.
Absolutely. And I think the kind of going into like the next solution I kind of want to talk about is the communication in real time. This is the part that the receiver and the giver miss. People might receive a passive aggressive behavior, like someone's doing something over 3 months. Did you confront them the first time, the 14th, the 22nd? you're losing steam.
Yeah, right.
And on the flip side, if you're the one who's dishing it out and no one checks you and stops you, you are going to be a creature. We're all creatures of habit. You're going to continue to do it because no one has checked you, period. No one is mm-hmm. telling you that your behavior is wrong. So that real time piece of it, I don't know, what's your thoughts on that? Like, with the real time, like how much time do you think needs to lapse, or is there never a right time and you need to just act quickly?
You've got to spot it out and talk about it ASAP. As soon as you see it, as soon as it rears its head, because there's nothing worse than letting a problem fester. And then once you come and talk about it and hash it out, it's just like a relationship. You know, you're mad at your boyfriend or girlfriend for doing the same thing. And then finally one day it boils up and you're exploding on a person. You know what I mean? So yeah. You have to talk about and level set expectations as early as you can, especially if you just started a new job or started a new position. I'll speak for myself. I just started here at MTV in December. And, you know, there are a lot of things to learn about team dynamics and how to work with people, et cetera. And I said, hey, I let people know when I first started, I said, I'm a very literal person. So if you frame things in terms of a question, I'm going to think they're a question. So as often as you can, keep be direct with feedback. It really helps me out. I'm trying to work on that, you know. But what I'm really saying is, one thing that really bothers me is when people say, hey, do you want to send me that so-and-so, so-and-so? I hate when people ask a question when they really are telling you to do something. Oh. And I'm going to take it as a suggestion and not a request. You know, like, mm-hmm. do you want to do one more take? We're on set. You want to do one more take of that read?
No.
No, I don't. Because I think the last one was great.
Right? I think the one was great.
No, I don't. I want to go home. I think I did great. I want to go home. But if you say, hey, you probably need to do another one, let's get it for safety, it really help the edit because the editor, you know, needs another take she can cut from. Oh, cool. I'm cool with making everybody's job easier. Let's get it. You know, so anyway, that's my personal rub. So sometimes it's good when you come into a job and let people know what your languages are, how to speak to you. Or we had a situation on the team where we had just to level set expectations when we work with other teams in the same department. And before it came to a head, we set up a meeting with the editorial director and said, hey, listen, I think we should work on this. They should work on that, blah, 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 blah. And so it nipped it right there in the bud. And then our writers had conversations, sidebars, and lunches to talk through where they may have been passive aggressive with one another. And, you know, from the top down, it was an opportunity to nip something in the bud that could have festered for months and bubbled up into something really unproductive.
Yeah, that I wish all teams did that, but people don't have that.
Oh yeah, I made it sound real nice because I have to remember I was on a podcast. When we get off there, I'll tell you exactly what happened. It was juice. But we kept it from being dramatic, and it was good.
Yeah, that was my best thing. I think that's key. That's critical. You know, setting boundaries and expectations. You know, you explicitly saying, "Hey, this is my rub. Please don't do that to me." Hey, tell me what you need. Again, going back to the feelings versus the facts and telling people what you need versus what you feel. What you're feeling is, oh, I don't want to rub them the wrong way. So you insert this feeling or this emotion into your statement. And now it's not a statement. It's a question. And you didn't even want it to be that. What you wanted was another take so editing had another cut. That's what you want.
Exactly.
Period. And like, exactly. And people just have I'm going to put this on Facebook too. People like to use question marks versus periods. Is that okay? Versus that's how we're going to proceed. Period. People feel like, you know, because when you do the second, it takes the emotion out of it. The other part is it makes it seem like it's like trying to accommodate. And in business, sometimes it's not necessary. And like you said, it'll be a rub. Like, girl, tell me what you need me to do.
Right. And it's what you're saying is so crucial. Periods are not question marks, because what it does is it opens the door for other people to be more real with you.
Absolutely.
So now I'm not asking for permission for anything. So they're like, well, I'm going to treat him how he treat me. and now they're real. And now we're really getting to the heart of conversations, and it's a lot better that way.
Yeah, and you know, my last point was about creating and contributing to the environment and the type of essence of what you want to be a part of. If you want to communicate directly with your team and you want them to do the same, you got to do that. You have to be the change you want to see. You know, it takes one person to do something to empower another person to do it, to empower another person. Because again, corporate America and with the workplace in general, it's a system. It's a construct, that's built on a hierarchy, and people can confuse professionalism with insubordination, right? I'm being professional, but if I do X, Y, and Z, I can be looked at as insubordinate if I don't do this. So I think breaking those chains, like, we don't need those chains. Like, let's just be specific about what we need. Always respectful. That's a given. We shouldn't be having a conversation on the podcast today about, hey, the importance of being, of giving respect to your team members. Come on, y'all. Do better. But, you know, it's like,
yeah, it's true.
Some stuff is a given. The passive aggressive thing, not so much a given, but I think if people take the necessary steps of, you know, accountability and benefit of the doubt and being strategic and thoughtful about what they need, I think, you know, we'll get to a better place and more people will feel like empowered in these situations versus like disempowered.
Absolutely. I have a question for you, though, on to this end, though.
Yeah.
What about, how do you communicate effectively then with people who don't prefer direct information and who are used to a work culture that is more passive aggressive and more conciliatory? You know, how do you thrive in that type of space? Because I think a lot of, I keep bringing it back to us, but I think a lot of us end up in workspaces where the whole culture supports and rewards that kind of communication. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Just as the cultures, to answer this, I think just as much as the corporate infrastructure awards passive aggressive kind of like behavior, I think it also awards the few people who keep it real. And I'm amongst those people. Right, I'm amongst the Cardi B's of the workplace. And, you know, it's like the outliers, the badass rebels, but they do their job. They deliver. They're different. They go rogue. I'll fall into that category with a smile.
Right.
Because you can't. I believe in trying to be my authentic self. And when I'm trying to communicate with people, I'm very, very upfront with anybody I've managed. They'll tell you in the very beginning, I tell you exactly my style of communication. I believe everybody should have their own personal autonomy over how they want to do stuff. The end of the day, if it's due at 5:30, get it done at 5:30. You know, it should be done at 5:30. I don't care if you use, I said this on an episode before, I don't care if you use your index finger, your pinky finger to type with the letter A or L, you still getting it done. So for me, it's about getting the work done in your natural space that you feel comfortable in. And then also for people who are more passive, you know, I lead with my openness. Like, I'm pretty flexible with communication styles. This is how I prefer to communicate. You know, especially if I'm in a manager style or even when I'm talking to a new manager who's managing me. This is how I like to communicate. How do you like to communicate? I'd be very specific about assessing their needs as well, because then I can tailor my style to how I need to. Basically, I've worked with people I've had clients who told me, I don't want to be greeted in an email. Just tell me what you need. I don't, you know, the hello, you know, I got reported before. It's actually happened several times in my career. Dominique is too diplomatic via correspondence. She needs to get to the point. I'm like, damn, saying happy Friday was not getting to the point. Like, yeah. It was four words away. Can you see it? You know what I'm saying? So it's like, you just have to tailor your communication style in these different spaces where it's like, you know, people have their own opinions, and sometimes it's just about the business. You know, I stopped saying, hello, person. Hope this email finds you well. I just started sending it exactly how they ask me to. The people who want to kick it, we could kick it. The people who want to know about your weekend, you give it to them. And the people who don't want to know about
your clients are like me, man. I'm one of those, man. I got someone I work with who calls me and he asks about my weekend and he goes into all of this. I'm like, you don't care about my weekend. I got 5 minutes. Let's get to it.
I feel you. Now I feel you. But, you know, in the business that I work in, client management, like if you compare this to like music management, it's like an A&R. It's all about building relationships. So now you're telling me not to do my job because we going to have bad days and I'm going to have to know about your kids and I'm going to have to know about who you are.
Yeah, that's true.
You know what I mean? So it's different, right? It's different for me like reaching out. You know, I was recently working on a Steve Harvey integration for a client's work. And, you know, I'm working directly with iHeartRadio, being very specific. We know we up against deadline. I'm not really trying to kick it with you. This is probably going to be our only time to work together until the next fall integration. Hey, here's this, jumping straight to it. But somebody who I have to talk to every single day, sis.
Yeah, I'm going to need to know you.
I'm going to need to know, like, maybe where you went for lunch today. I might be a little interested. And you know what I mean? It makes it a little bit easier. If you have a long-term relationship with someone and you don't know anything about them, that's weird.
Mm-hmm.
That's a little strange.
Yeah, it's true.
So, yeah, that's kind of how I navigate. You have any other questions for me before we get into our listener letter?
Oh, no, let's get into the listener letter.
Cool. So, I got this letter, and it's intense. It speaks for itself, and we're going to try to do our best to give some advice. So, this is what it says. My manager is trying to set me up to fire me. Every chance she gets, she is finding small, petty ways to say I have not done my job properly or make random snide remarks that are inappropriate. She has stated to me, being 2 minutes late is unacceptable. Even when I work through lunch, minimize how much water or juice I'm drinking to avoid bathroom breaks, and stay over an hour late every day. She recently saw that I had a detox tea on my desk and stated that I shouldn't be drinking this because it would cause me to have to use the bathroom more frequently and reduce my time to work. There has been even whispers in the break room that she told another employee that she needed a better support system so she wouldn't have to leave work on time to go get her kids from daycare. I think her behavior is passive aggressive, but I don't even know how to report that to HR. Can you help? Ooh, child.
I would find a way to get some of these communications in email and to codify. And you tell me, I'm really thinking through this in real time. So
yeah,
you tell
me
if this sounds good to you, Damo. If I were in the situation, I would find a way to codify some of the different things that have come as criticisms. And I'd say, hey, over the past few weeks, I've really been thinking about some of the feedback you've been giving me. Here's some of the things that seem to be a problem for you, right? And I will list some of those things and think about what, again, we see how the manager feels, but think about what is spurring his feeling, right? Because they really don't care about your tea and say all of this. What is it that's at the root of it?
Exactly.
And if you can't put your finger on it, I will put all of these things in email and say, so I really just want to find out how I can become a better employee and how to make our work styles fit a little better. What solutions do you have so I can address some of these concerns that you've got? Happy to put them in place. Because you might put it on yourself because you might find that maybe there is something that you're doing that's making that person think that, you know, you take too many bathroom breaks or 2 minutes late, whatever the case may be. Obviously, that's not the case. But it forces that person to then, in writing, give you actionable feedback. And whatever the actionable feedback is, now you have something that over the course of the next few weeks to work through. And so now they have to give you feedback through that filter, through that lens. And now if you still receive this kind of energy from your manager, you have written communication about the kind of feedback that you've been getting. And then when you reply the following week, you can say, okay, I've improved in these areas. This is where I'm at. Thanks so much, blah, blah, blah. Also, when you communicate your wins in that email as well, so that down the line, you got a record with HR about how much you've improved upon all this petty crap that your manager said that you haven't been addressing upon. You know what I'm saying? But
yeah.
I don't know. What do you think?
I think that's phenomenal. I think when you said communicating the wins in that email, that is something people miss all the time. They'll get the the CYA emails. I call them CYA, cover your ass emails, you know. And
yes,
it's like they'll have it, but it won't talk about the progress. It only is rooted in the problem. So people, when HR reads it, they're like, but nothing here states you've improved. And the manager says you haven't improved. I think regurgitating those wins and those victories is key. And making sure that, I think what you said, I mean, I think you hit it on the nail on the head. I think as far as the pettiness, take yourself out of it. I think that accountability piece is like, that's going to be frustrating, but I recommend you sitting with someone and writing these thoughts out and getting their thoughts. Find the most strategic person you know to sit with you and proof that email. And if you don't have a strategic person in your life, you need to find a strategic person in your life, because I know I have a go-to. If I have a complicated situation, I know exactly who I'm going to. So I encourage you in this process to find a mentor, find someone who you know can eloquently articulate things very directly and to the point and to the facts to help you kind of navigate through that situation. And also, if you see that, I always go to like the worst case scenario. If you see the HR and your manager, they still find a way to kind of get you out there. I just want you to look at it as a positive. Maybe God is moving you somewhere else for a reason, and don't try to stay in a situation that is trying to force you out. Just pack your things and go, because sometimes people will try to force you out. Do all the things that, you know, Medi just recommended. But if someone is trying to force you out, you know, you can either leave by force, or, you know, you can leave by your choice.
By choice. One thing that's great about too, those TYAEs, as you call them, even in that email where you're asking for the feedback, and when you communicate those wins, and you also frame the email not only as a feedback focused email, but also as a, by the way, here's what's going on in the business so far. You know, my last video got this many views, speaking in my language. We had great engagement with this. I got this comment from this person, this da 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 da. I think things are really going well in these areas, but I'm happy to improve upon those other ones. Have to acknowledge when they respond to those wins, and now you have them codified. And as you think about them, take those wins to your next employment opportunity. You know what I'm saying? So now you've racked up kind of, you've reminded yourself of your value to the space that you're in, your value in the company. But it also kind of helps you update that resume and get out of there if they don't change their approach.
Yes. Got to look at it in a positive, like flip your challenges into your victories. You know, it's like, okay, yeah, I got out of there, but you know how to write a damn good email. You have that. Make sure you file that away too, because it's helpful. And when you're trying to pass a torch, like for me, I know I reference, I save out emails like with confrontation, like, my heavy confrontational emails that have a lot of information, the way I've structured it. I save them out on a Google Drive, and I reference them when people ask for advice. I'm like, oh, I got something for you. This worked.
Right.
Here you go. You don't even have to sit for 2 hours like I did. Like, how do I write this? I need to, you know, scale this down. You know, make sure you're filing those things away, because they come back up. They do.
That's true.
Yeah. So our next segment will be called I Can't Make This Up, which is where you, Medi, are going to tell about a crazy, extravagant story that sounds like you're probably not telling the truth, but you really are telling the truth as it relates to corporate America. So, example, I once had a client tell my management team she wanted me to work behind the scenes. She didn't want me to talk via email. She wanted me to coach the team to get it to the finish line, but she didn't want to have to talk to me. And I can't make this up. So it's a corporate America story that sounds like you made it up, but you really didn't.
I can't make this up. My first speaking engagement in New York came because I built a relationship with someone's assistant. Let me explain. So one of my favorite mottos is treat the secretary like the CEO and the janitor like the manager. And I was working an event. I met someone who worked in another part of the company, pretty low level in the company, but was putting together an event series with industry and media influencers about how you can,
basically black people in media, how you can get to the next level. And so I organically become a part of this conversation. I'm like, man, I would love to be there and help out in any way I can. She's like, yeah, we need somebody to work the door. And then my homie is like, no, this guy's an MTV host. He doesn't check in people at doors. And I was like, I said, no, it's cool. I've been to New York for 3 weeks. It'd be a good opportunity to meet someone. And no one is above any job. And the way I was thinking about it was, if I'm checking people in at the door, I'm meeting all the bosses, and I got their emails and contact information right in front of me because it's on the paper that I'm checking them in with.
Ooh.
So, I ain't got no problem with that. You know what I mean? I can get my business cards if I need to. It's good for me. So I agree to check in people at the door. I end up organically an assistant to one of the VPs. And, you know, we exchange Instagram information. Super just positive person, just had like great positive quotes out. And it'd always be something that I was reading that they'd be reading and I was thinking about. And I said, man, I love to do coffee just to pick your brain and just talk through the concept of manifestation and positive thinking. You know, we seem to be on the same wavelength. They said, great. I meet up with the person. They say, wow, I was a part of the event that I was putting together. And I thought it was a mistake that your name was on the list to check in people at the door. I won't have you checking in people at the door. You need to speak. Now, the panel is already, the list of panelists is already 2-4, but would you mind giving a 5 to 10 minute address to kick the event off?
Wow.
So, I came back to the exact same event, and so I end up going back. You know, of course, I say yes, and I got a chance to introduce myself to that room of people, and I told the story of how I got into MTV, and it was inspirational. It was a lot of people who were in college and wanted to be in media, all the way through people who were executives and VPs who were speaking on the panel, but they all got a chance to hear what it was I had to say. And had I not been open to taking the most menial job, that wouldn't have happened. And if I not been open to meeting with an assistant, that wouldn't have happened. So,
wow. We can't make this up, y'all. That's a positive story. Yes, you're the first person that shared a positive experience, I would say. Like, most people, for the most, it's usually rooted in something like bad. Well, I take that back. I'm lying. It's so many episodes. But yeah, I really like that positive take. You know, sometimes, again, all about converting that challenge into that opportunity. It's about perspective. And you saw that opportunity as, hey, I'm not too good for that job. Like, let me go ahead and do that. And look what God did. Look at that.
Look at what God, I feel like it was a test. I'm not going to lie down. Yes. I was in my head too. Like, I damn sure don't need to be checking people in. But I had to sit down and really humble myself. I talk about humility. And you know, especially in the business that I'm in, with your front facing and your face is on the camera, humility is in short order in the space that I inhabit. And I think because I try to embrace it, it's become an asset. And so, you know, if there's one thing I would leave with, not only with that story, but even this conversation, as we look at how to navigate interpersonal relationships at work and how to get to the next level, when you're pointing the finger at yourself first and reimagining how you think about situations, you know, I think a lot of good comes from that. And all solutions flow from that space, too.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, I couldn't have wrapped it up any better. Like, you know, I think we hit on some really amazing things today. I hope people like listen to this and have a notepad, because it's definitely some gems being dropped. And it's definitely some, I think we really spotlighted character in this conversation, and humility and accountability. Those are some of the big themes of this conversation about how to really navigate this passive aggressive behavior and how to not be champions of it either. You know, whether you're on the giving or receiving end, it's critical to figure out how to kind of troubleshoot, you know, things as they come up. And communication is key. You know, people say that all the time, but it's easier said than done. So hopefully, you know, with this episode, people are able to take away some good tips and tricks that's going to help them today, tomorrow, and whenever.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the truth. I'm glad you created space for the conversation. I appreciate you. let people know about the show. The show is called Need to Know, and my Twitter page is DOMETI_, same as my website, domet.net.
And please, please, please retweet, support the show, engage with us. It means a lot. And I appreciate you having me on the platform for real. This is something that I kid you not, I wish I had when I was going through what I was going through, because I would have gotten through those situations much more smoothly if I was listening to podcasts like this.
Well, thank you so much. You know, you are always I love talking to you anyway, just online, offline. It's always a great conversation. And, you know, thank you for people like you who have a, you know, an inspirational perspective, who bring all of these different ideas to the table. And you're so, you know, well-versed in your background that your story is able to reach so many people. It has so much value and meaning. So thank you for joining the show.
Thank you.
For sure. Definitely always a pleasure to chop it up with you. So make sure you following him on his social media handles. If you didn't hear it, push that, you know, replay button, rewind it by 15 seconds, about 15 seconds ago. And yeah. Make sure you are also following the podcast. You know, if this is your first time tuning in, there's tons of other content that you can be tapping into that's going to really help you to navigate the corporate space. And don't forget to shoot me a message. You know, I want to hear from you guys. I want to get your feedback. I want to know if this is really helpful. You know, for me, it's helpful as I'm ministering to you. I'm ministering to myself. I learn something new every time I have a conversation that's not on script, that's not on paper. You know, these fluid conversations are benefiting me too. So I want to hear how they're benefiting you. And last but not least, if you are not following me on social media, you make sure you go follow me at Lyrics by Lyric or Dominique Lyric on Instagram, Facebook, or Twitter for some weekly tips and tricks on how we're going to navigate this thing called corporate America. Thanks again, Maddie. And we're going to see everybody next week.
Thank you.
All right. Bye, y'all.